You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the Original Mothers in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Ry, the movie guy, and this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we adjust our pocket protectors as we cover our top five favorite geeks in movies.
This is going to be great, man. I'm pushing up my glasses. I brought the tape for the middle of my glasses.
You might actually make my top five, Matt.
Yeah, that'd be fair. It'd be fair.
We are doing this because we have a great geek joining us. I hope he doesn't mind me calling him a geek, but he's a cool geek. You know what I mean?
Well, the geeks have inherited the earth, right?
I agree. Yeah. And last time he was on the show, he was actually telling us how we got it all wrong. You know, the geeks get the girls now. The athletes don't get the girls anymore. He has his own podcast. You were on it, called One Shot.
Yep, it's about role-playing games, so I mean, that's pretty geeky.
Yeah, James D'Amato is coming back for his second appearance. He was on like a month and a half ago. We loved him, the Jawheads loved him, so he's making a comeback.
Yep.
In addition to that, Matt, it is the dead of winter, so we wanted to fill up the Jawheads' queue at home. This is a good time to stay home, watch movies at home. So we did a little extra research, watched a couple of films, a couple of great films too, and we're going to discuss a little bit in length. They are both streaming on Netflix Instant and also Redbox Instant. The Act of Killing documentary and also Drinking Buddies.
Yeah, it's seriously just a good time. I mean, in Chicago right now, it is like some sort of polar vortex going on. Chiberia is what we're calling it. It's 13 below out. Stay inside and watch some darn Netflix.
And I'm going to have a couple extra picks for Netflix and staying at
Red
home
Box.
And watching. Redbox. Yeah, everything.
And full disclosure, they support the show.
And stuff that's just out on DVD that isn't streaming quite yet, but we'll throw it out there. We also have big news. We have a movie club, sort of a virtual movie club. Our first title selection we will announce today, and we'll be discussing that movie 2 weeks from now.
Yeah. Should we say what it is?
Oh, not yet. Not
no?
yet.
Okay.
Give it
All
one
right.
second.
Okay.
Give it one second.
I'm excited about it. Bro.
Yes. Plus, Yourself versus James, because we are going eye for an eye on a movie called The Awkward Moment, starring Zac Efron, you will be taking James on in Successful Child Actor Movie Trivia.
That's a short list. All right.
Plus, I also wanted to talk about, obviously, the biggest Oscar snub this season, Before Midnight, not being nominated for Best Picture.
No. That was not the biggest Oscar snub this season.
What?
Inside Llewyn Davis.
What are you talking about, Matt?
It's the biggest Oscar snub of the year.
No, Before Midnight.
Cinema War.
Oh, boy. That's going to be a good Cinema War right there, Matt. Yeah. Llewyn Davis against Before Midnight. Jam-packed jaw.
As always.
So without further ado, we bring in our guest. He is a host of a podcast, role-playing podcast, called One Shot. James D'Amato, welcome back to Cinema Jaw.
Hey, thank you guys so much for welcoming me back. I also want to add, I have another podcast that I didn't mention last time, and my co-host should be furious, although I don't think he listens to my appearances, so maybe we can ignore it. But I also, on the same network, Peaches and Hot Sauce, host the Overshare podcast, which is about improv. If you're not enough of a nerd to be into role-playing, maybe you'll listen to The Overshare and hear some deeply personal stories.
Now, last time we had you on, Matt was basically recording a podcast of Star Wars role-playing. It is out there now for all the Jawheads to listen to Matt playing a character, as I've heard the podcast, called R2-D20. How original, Matthew.
Hey, I thought it was pretty clever.
As soon as he floated the idea for that name, I said, absolutely, you're playing R2-D20. That is the sort of high-quality punsmanship that we encourage on One Shot. Maybe I shouldn't announce that on a program where I'm trying to promote my show. That's probably a bad idea. But he plays R2-D20, who is so great, and I feel bad because we dubbed over most of his speaking lines with the R2-D2 clicks and whistles.
You know what? I actually think that your listeners are better off because of it.
it
made me sound smart.
It turned out pretty great because everybody in the podcast understood what Matt said, but nobody can understand what the R2-D2 said, so everybody's left to infer. And usually, like, I think the most common word after you spoke was usually like, whoa, how could you say that? So It's a good episode. You guys should check that one out.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It ends in a cliffhanger. This is only part one.
This is part one. There's going to be, it's a trilogy, if you will, three parts with Matt. And we're actually going to record a sequel trilogy like in this weekend.
Yeah.
So look forward to that for the next 6 weeks on One Shot. Matt is going to be representing the droid American community. Guess he's not really American, but...
He's close enough. Yeah. All right. I have a seriously geeky question for you, James, and maybe you can shed some light on
please,
this for me.
Please.
And it's related to Star Wars, as a matter of fact.
I love geeky questions.
If Darth Vader could figure out, using the Force, that Luke Skywalker had a sister, how come the entire Jedi Council couldn't figure out that Anakin had a secret wife?
Okay, this is simple, because they're connected through the Force. Leia was a Force-sensitive person, Luke was a Force-sensitive person, and there were Anakin's kids. So he could sense, and he's also the Chosen One. Anakin is the living aspect of the Force. You don't notice it in Phantom Menace because it's very, very poorly written, but his mother mentions that there is no father.
Yes, yeah.
Literally,
I'm trying to forget that.
Literally, the Force caused Anakin. The Force is Anakin's father, so he could
sounds
sense
a little rapey
through,
there.
Well, maybe. You know what? I think she was attracted to the Force. Yeah. They were hitting it off. They were actually dating. She was dating the Force.
A couple of drinks. Bada bing, bada boom.
Maybe. Certainly, Anakin wasn't planned between her and the Force. They didn't use protection though, so like that was gonna happen.
You would think they would just use the Force.
Yeah.
I don't even know if protection can stop the Force from impregnating.
You got to, if you are dating the Force out there, if you're a person who's like, you know, sort of fooling around with the Force, be careful. It's because they were Force sensitive. He could sense Leia through the Force.
Basically because they were
Padme,
his kids.
Not Force sensitive. And Anakin, being the living aspect of the Force, probably very difficult to discern what's going on with him.
Hmm.
You know, I'll bet he had like all sorts of subconscious blockades up so the council couldn't delve into his mind.
Well, you've satisfactorily explained it for me. Thank you. Because this was bothering me.
Yeah. Look where you led this podcast.
I know.
Man.
Now I feel better about Star Wars. I mean, I was thinking this morning, major plot hole. But now I'm satisfied. Wow. Thank
you, James.
If
you watch the Clone Wars, it'll change your whole perspective on that first trilogy.
Honestly, just put it on my queue after listening to the podcast.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Nice. Everybody, put it on your queue.
Also wanted to mention, James has some exciting news. We have been going to C2E2, the Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, for the last 4 years. We are going to be there again this year, Matt. And it comes to my attention that One Shot will be there as well. James,
absolutely.
You'll be joining us in Podcast Alley.
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago, we signed the contract for that. So One Shot will be there. We're going to have some great giveaways. We're going to be raffling off some dolls that have been handmade by one of our One Shot regulars, Kat Murphy. We're also going to be giving away printed editions, maybe not giving away, we haven't decided yet, printed editions of Colonials. That is the Fiasco role-playing module that I designed, which combines Coen Brothers movies with the Aliens universe. You know you want to play that already. So please, you know, stop by the booth at C2E2. Stop by the Cinema Job booth at C2E2. Pick up our module. Say hi to everybody. We would love to see you.
We're probably going to be in the same row.
We're definitely going to be in the same row.
And also, James, for the Jawheads, again, that want to hear your podcast, One Shot, where's the best place to find you online and also to follow you on Twitter?
The best place to find my podcast, both my podcasts, is at peachesandhotsauce.com. I have One Shot there and the Overshare that I co-host with my good friend Alex Manich. And you just go to peachesandhotsauce.com. We're right on the main page. And there's the feed of all the great Peaches and Hot Sauce podcasts. And if you want to find me on Twitter, I am at OneShotRPG. At OneShotRPG. I don't know how Twitter works. And you can follow us there and get all the show updates.
Awesome. awesome. We got a great geek, would you not agree, Matt?
Oh, yeah. And he's a movie geek, too.
Right, to cover our top five favorite movie geeks. I love it.
I am so excited for that portion of the show.
Now, Matt, also talking about exciting news here, as I mentioned at the top, we had been mulling around this idea of having like a virtual movie club once a month, picking a selection, something that's out there that most people probably haven't seen, and maybe me and you haven't seen as well. And it gives you sort of a reason to view it. Get the fans involved on Twitter, on Facebook. We'll read your comments, your emails about it, and make it really, as best we can, a virtual movie club. And we may even open this up eventually to maybe like live podcasting with comments coming in constantly. We'll see as it grows. Mm-hmm. Now, because the Oscar nominations were out, we thought we'd tie it in that way, and we looked at the film Nebraska. I gave Matt, I don't know what you're going to pick here, but I gave Matt two picks. They both involved nominees at the Oscars. One is Alexander Payne, and one is Bruce Dern. Matt, can you please give us the first selection of the CinemaJaw Movie Club?
The envelope, please. The first selection of the CinemaJaw Movie Club will be Silent Running, starring Bruce Dern, 1972. Here's a synopsis. In a future where all flora is extinct on Earth, an astronaut is given orders to destroy the last of Earth's botany kept in a greenhouse aboard a spacecraft.
Ooh. Whoa. See, we pick interesting movies here. The other one was Citizen Ruth, which was Alexander Payne's first directed film. So we selected Silent Running, Jawheads, and we picked this. Obviously, we want to make it easy for everyone to watch. It is streaming on Netflix and also Redbox Instant. So check it out. We will be talking about it 2 weeks from tonight. So start shooting us your tweets.
Sounds good.
All right, Matt. It brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
Redbox Instant. How about that?
Oh, I love it.
Redbox Instant is one of the best streaming services out there. Their boxes are ubiquitous. Here's the best thing. You can stream a bunch of movies at home, just like Netflix, and you get their DVDs at their kiosk. You get four free codes per month.
Yes, that's awesome. Helps you out with the new releases. And the best part is, Jawheads, you can try out the service free for 1 month. Just go to cinemajaw.com. You'll see an ad for their service there. Click on it. You get a month free of their service, and you help CinemaJaw out as well.
Win-win. We thank them for their support.
Eye for an Eye this week, That Awkward Moment. Three best friends find themselves where we've all been, at that confusing moment in every dating relationship when you have to decide, so where is this going? The film stars Zac Efron, Michael B. Jordan, and Miles Teller. Matt, interested or ignore on That Awkward Moment?
Ignore.
Whoa.
Sorry, doesn't sound interesting.
We throw it over to James. Interested or ignore on That Awkward Moment?
I'm going to have to go ignore.
Wow. Tough crowd here, guys.
Let's see where Rye goes.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you what. I mean, it's obviously a guy's comedy.
Yeah, please tell us what.
Here's the thing. Michael B. Jordan is coming off of Fruitvale Station. He was the star of Fruitvale Station.
He was great on the Bulls, too.
Yeah. And in
notice, he puts a B in his name.
Space Jam.
Come on, guys. He puts a B in his name to separate him from your airness. And also, Miles Teller, who's awesome in The Spectacular Now, and it's a great movie if you haven't seen it. Just came out on DVD. I'm actually going to go slightly interested on That Awkward Moment.
I don't understand. Well, it's got a title that is clearly trying to play into the That Awkward Moment meme.
Right.
Like, they are clearly out for your dollars. Don't give them your dollars.
I'm not saying this is going to be great, but it's clearly a smaller movie. We're about to discuss Zac Efron in depth, but I love this Miles Teller. I think he's really going to be a star. And Michael B. Jordan impressed me in Fruitvale Station. I don't hate Zac Efron. I'm not saying it's going to be great, but mild interested. That's all I can say, especially for the January releases, the junk that we're getting. It mildly interests me. That's it.
There's not much else to pick from.
I agree. That's why we are filling up our Jawheads queue here in a second. One, mild interested. Two, ignores for That Awkward Moment. As I stated, Zac Efron is starring in this film, and I thought it would be fun to ask you guys to describe Zac Efron in three words or less. James, we're starting with you. What do you got?
All right. I have two of these because I believe there are two contingents right now who are interested in
this. He always has to do
this.
Something goofy, doesn't he, man?
He
can never follow the rules. You can't follow the rules.
I make my own rules.
So there are two contingents who are probably interested in this. There are the Jawheads, you know, clearly the superior contingent, and then there are the Zac Efron fans, as we know are out there. So I'll start with the Zac Efron fans to explain to them why I don't care for Zac Efron. And I'll say I'm a very good friend with a performer here in Chicago. His name is Brian Holden. So I will say of this, Zac Efron, French fry thief. You stole Brian Holden's French fries.
Wow. True story?
True story.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Right off his plate, he just ganked him.
And was this a crinkle cut fry?
Because
if it's a crinkle cut fry, there's no room here. I mean, the guy should be locked up.
Brian Holden is part of a theater collective called Starkid. They did the Harry Potter musical on YouTube. I'm plugging somebody else's work right now. And one of the member of the Starkid collective is Darren Chiss, who is on Glee. So they met Zac Efron through that connection. And they were hanging out with Zac Efron. Brian Holden had a bag of French fries, and Zac Efron took it.
Wow. Just right out of his hands?
Not out of his hands. They were hanging out. It was like a common thing. But Brian Holden came with his French fries, and Zac Efron left with those French fries. Who does that? Monsters.
Wow.
But for the Jawheads, I will say Disney carousel escapee.
I believe
Zac Efron was supposed to be murdered when he was younger, and it didn't work out. And now he's out there. He's like Miley Cyrus. He should have been destroyed.
I love
it. Now they're among us.
Matt, what do you got?
I only need two words. Douchebag. I'm sorry. I'm just going to go ahead and say what we're all thinking here.
Well, you guys are really harsh at him, I think.
Very harsh. Hey. He's a thief.
Here's what I got. And I didn't try to be, you know, I saw some of the tweets coming in because we threw this out onto Twitter. I wasn't as creative as them. I just went shallow, but smart. And here's why I say but smart, because he does not have that much talent, right? He's come up, but he's not one of these guys that's picking roles that is over his head. The roles that he's taken so far sort of fit what Zac Efron can do at this point in his career. So he's not like overextending himself. And he was in a movie called Liberal Arts. I don't know if you guys caught this one. Great romantic comedy. He plays like the side character, just a small role. He's also in Me and Orson Welles, which I thought he did a fine job in. And he's in the movie with where he gets peed on by Nicole Kidman. Oh, it escapes me now.
What a...
throw that one in the jaw box. And I've seen the movie and I've reviewed it on the show, but throw it in the jaw box.
How could you not remember that?
Yes. So
Zac Efron must.
Yeah.
But again, so I would say I don't hate the guy. You know what I mean? I don't like him, but I think he's choosing right roles to sort of stay in the spotlight right now.
I won't say that he's completely untalented. I mean, singing and dancing, those are talents that completely elude me, and he can clearly do that. I just don't think he's an actor.
Now, Matt, we threw this out to the Jawheads on Twitter. Did we get any responses?
We did. At Ben Taylorson said, here's his three words, High School Musical. And that's exactly how he wrote it, with a question mark.
With a question mark.
Sir Big John, who is at SBJ_007, said, he's still acting?
Nice use of three words.
I like it. Donnie Rodriguez, who is at Donnie Rad, said, he gave us two choices here.
Well, I think one's in Spanish.
This is not Spanish. It's German or something. Oh. New Devon Sawa. I don't get it. Sorry.
Good burn.
Donnie's comedy is too smart for me. Do you get it, Elias?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Read right after.
Shane West 2000.
It's New Devon Sawa.
Ah.
I'm still lost.
You know Devon Sawa?
No. Anyway. Who's Devon Sawa? Just explain
throw
it.
Throw that in the jaw box.
I forgot what movies he's from, but.
All right, throw in the jaw box.
I understand the way my brother speaks, so yeah. I got it.
Let's see. In Session Film, who is the same on Twitter, said, I've seen worse. Yep.
That's high praise.
Yeah, Shia LaBeouf comes to mind. At Darth G 007 said, he can't act. Man, there is no love.
They are being rough out of the jaw.
Here's another one. At Sebastian Nebel said, who's Zac Efron?
Technically three words.
Yep.
We had to include some love here. And Aaron Morgan, who is at AA Morgan 101 on Twitter, said, way too handsome. All caps.
Wow. See, I thought James might go there also.
He's pretty suspiciously handsome.
Yeah, and a couple have just came in too, Matt, that I did want to mention. A couple came in from Zac Efron fans. One of them from our Zac Efron News. Smart, talented, lovable.
Okay. They might be biased. I'm just saying.
And then also from Zachary Efron.
Wow. He actually commented?
No, but at Zachary Efron says, talented sex god.
Well, he's got a high opinion of himself
geez,
there.
Clearly.
And last but not least, you got Allison Jones just actually Twitter just came in, said Troy forever. I think he played Troy in High School Musical.
Okay.
And yeah. Brian,
I thought she hadn't forgotten the Trojan War.
Brian Tallarico.
And we shouldn't.
Writing us, I believe he's still out at Sundance, writes, on minute 14.
Of his 15 minutes.
There you go. I see it was right over
that
my head.
That was a good one.
That might be the best tweet.
Now I don't feel so bad for not knowing who Devin Sawa is.
Congrats, Tallarico. I love that one. On minute 14. That's probably the best of them.
Yeah.
Love it. Jawheads, if we missed three words that describe Zac Efron, and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going. What we're going to do right now is try to fill up your home theater queue here. This is winter time. You want to stay home. You want to watch movies. And we got a bunch of them for you. So grab a pen, grab some paper, write these down. Up first, The Act of Killing. A documentary that shows a former Indonesian death squad leaders reenacting their real-life mass killings. First and foremost, the film is just plain shocking and difficult to swallow as one by one the leaders and executioners talk openly about killing communists years earlier. They are actually reenacting these killings for a movie being made about them, and this documentary is almost a behind the scenes of that. I watched in amazement and in sadness. This documentary shows how people's minds can be distorted to do horrible things, and that they can actually justify it to themselves when recounting these events. However, our main subject, a man by the name of Anwar, finally has a breakdown and a breakthrough when thinking back to these killings. The film ends with one of the most powerful scenes you will ever see. Ride the Movie Guys grade 3.5 Jaws for The Act of Killing. James, Matt, I know you guys both saw it. Your thoughts?
Whew. I think that sums it all up, really. That movie... It was one that I tried to watch before you guys mentioned that it was going to be on the show, and I just couldn't. Like, I was filled with so much misanthropy that it's any documentary about mass killings like that is going to grab you no matter what. And I think the fact that this one included fictionalized moments and you actually got to peek into how these people saw themselves, it really makes you realize that human beings are a failed species, and, you know, we should all die.
That's a cheerful outlook, man.
Hey.
I mean, you know, it's creepy not only because of the way they see themselves, but the way that the public in this country still sees these guys, and they kind of hold them up as heroes. It shows you the power and danger of propaganda and how it can really twist an entire nation to commit atrocities and then kind of not even whisk them under the carpet, because they haven't. They're making a movie about it in this movie, so they're really trumpeting these as accomplishments.
Well, now, correct me if I'm wrong. I did research into this film because I originally couldn't even bring myself to watch it, but I thought the movie was a lie, and that was the way this director got them to talk about what they did.
I have not researched that, and I'm not positive if that is the case.
Yeah, I vaguely recall this from NPR. He thought that they wouldn't talk about their war crimes because they are war crimes. So he told them that he was going to make a movie about them in order to get them to tell him what they did. So this was an elaborate trick. And like, I think the musical scenes, there are musical scenes in this documentary. About
it actually opens up with one.
It's very bizarre.
It is. The way it opens up, I was like, what is this?
Oh my God.
It's just crazy. You know what I mean?
And beautiful, but crazy.
Yes. Yeah. And there is a scene in there where the main character, Anwar, is talking about how he never wore white clothes because he didn't want to get dirty while doing the killings. And it's just like disgusting watching this man talk about these things and talking about these actions. It's you're just stunned. You're just sitting there stunned as he's talking about it. Like, he doesn't even value these human lives at all. It's appalling and shocking.
Yeah, the cavalier attitude which they take toward the execution of many, many people. I mean, it does. I'm not gonna spoil the movie, but I'll just say that it does weigh on one of the characters, and ultimately, like you mentioned, there's a breakthrough, which is just something you have to see to believe. And just
but moments later, I will point out he sort of recants on that breakthrough as well. He's just like, oh, well, maybe I didn't do anything wrong. So
I gave this one 3.5 Jaws. How about you guys?
I think that is a good grade for it. I can't quite bring it to 4 because it destroyed me.
Matt?
I'd say 3.5 too. No, I mean, it definitely leveled me too, but there was a couple of pacing issues and some of the editing I thought could have been a little bit better.
Can you even pay attention to that?
It gets a little off track during the center. Like, I'm just like, okay, get on to the next.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an amazing documentary. I think it's important. So yeah, 3.5.
3.5 Jaws. Jawheads, it is streaming on Netflix and Redbox Instant. So that's one you can put on your queue. Speaking of documentaries, I didn't mention this one to you guys before we started, but it was left off best documentary list when the Oscar nominations came out. And it's Sarah Polley's Stories We Tell. And it's out on DVD. I've seen it. I don't think it's streaming, but it's definitely, you can find it at the Redbox.
It's nominated, right?
It did not get nominated.
Oh, it didn't.
And a lot of people thought it got snubbed. I thought it was one of the year's best. I know when we had Brian Tallarico on, he mentioned it and how he had brought it here, part of the Chicago film
critics.
I've
heard about more documentary snubs, because I was talking with a friend about this one. That one was snubbed. Blackfish also
Blackfish
got
was
snubbed.
Also snubbed, yes.
What is it with us caring about the documentary?
I know. I
That's
love that.
Great.
I love that it's at the forefront. And Stories We Tell is Sarah Polley, who's this accomplished actress, now director, really just telling her family story, and this dark secret sort of unfolds in the movie. So different than you see most documentaries. Extremely worthy of a spin. So check that one out as well.
Nice.
Stories We Tell, and that's at Redbox Boxes. You can rent it there.
Cool.
Also, I had told you guys, let's check out this movie, Drinking Buddies. It's a Chicago movie. This one's on a little bit lighter of a note, right, guys?
Nice follow-up.
Yeah. The title of the film actually could be considered a spoiler alert, I guess. Olivia Wilde, Anna Kendrick, Ron Livingston star in this new take on adult relationships. The subtle story takes place at a Chicago brewery and involves two couples who might not be right for each other. The film explores how two people can work as a couple, while two others can really only work as the title suggests, drinking buddies. I myself could have used a few more laughs in the middle there and would have liked to get to know the characters a bit more, but I do recommend it slightly. For me, this is about a 2.5 jaw film.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I think it's the problems with this movie mainly come from the dialogue, which was largely improvised. They didn't have a script per se of exactly what they were going to do, so they improvised a lot of the scenes. Although I thought the ending was fantastic, the middle is just so-so. So, yeah, would you give it 2.5?
Mm-hmm. 2.5.
Yeah, I might even go 2. I mean, it wasn't... I wanted to like this. They didn't show enough Chicago.
I agree. And then they mentioned Revolution Brewing.
That was cool.
Which is... Mm-hmm.
Revolution Brewing is a plot point, basically.
Yeah, but for the jawheads that don't know, like, I mean, it's this, you know, we're really behind it here in Chicago. And if you haven't been there, it's in Logan Square. And, oh, the beers are outstanding. So
absolutely
it was
great.
It was awesome that they tied that into the movie, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I think that was my favorite character in the film as Revolution. I will say this. As an improviser, I'm going to give it a 3. And the reason I'm going to do it, the improv moments in that are so intimate and great. Like, it might not be the best dialogue in the world, but showing scenes of a male-female friendship, you can't get much better than that. Just the in-jokes that they portrayed, the way that they would look each other and interact, it was perfect. I have to say, although the movie itself didn't really go anywhere and didn't really accomplish anything, the acting was great.
And I love Olivia Wilde. She's really turned into a great actress, as is Anna Kendrick, and Ron Livingston's always nice to see on screen.
Jake Johnson, you know, breaking into sort of indie movies
right
away from his sitcom career. Yeah, I think he's got a future. Although I will admit, when I first put the movie on, I wasn't looking directly at it, and I was like, is Charlie Day in this movie? They've got very similar voices, and I feel guilty about it. Sorry to Jake Johnson, and sorry to Charlie Day. Although you guys should do a buddy comedy together.
Now, Jawheads, this one is also streaming on Netflix and Redbox Instant, so there's another one for you. Also streaming on Netflix is The Iceman. Michael Shannon stars as Richard Kuglinski.
Does he cometh? Spoiler alert.
Shannon stars as Richard Kuglinski, a man who worked for mob families in the 1960s and 70s. He reportedly killed more than 100 people during this time. I love the authentic look of this film, from the mustaches to the cheap leather coats to the big cars they drove. I'm also a fan of the cast. Ray Liotta, Winona Ryder, and Chris Evans pop up in supporting roles. And it's actually also fun to see James Franco appear for a bit. And not to mention David Schwimmer.
What?
Yes, David Schwimmer, who I thought did a great job in the role he was in.
Did you just say David Schwimmer
I
a great
did.
Job in the same sentence?
Shocking.
You're not allowed to say David Schwimmer after and 1990.
He's got the mustache and the 70s look. It's awesome. The story does not dig deep enough for this to be a great film, but Michael Shannon's performance carries it to a damn good spin. Ride the Movie Guys grade 3 Jaws for The Iceman.
I'm going to have to watch it.
Based on a true story, I mean, it's creepy to know how many guys, you know, this man killed and why he's actually called the Iceman.
Well, because he ices them, right?
Damn right.
Okay.
Throws off what time he actually killed him. That way the coroners couldn't tell time of death.
Very cool.
Oh, you mean he literally puts them on ice?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was like, you know, a euphemism for murder.
Oh, no. Okay. No, actually puts them on ice. Oh, boy, this guy was a real professional. And now a couple of others that we're just going to briefly talk about. One I mentioned when we covered our top 10 of 2013. This one came in at number 10 for me. It's called Europa Report. And it's a found footage film of 6 astronauts who make the trip to the moon Europa. And usually I'm not a big fan of these found footage films. It stars 2 actors who, one is Vickis from
District 9.
District 9, yes. And he's also in Elysium. And yeah. Also,
he's a great actor.
Yeah, he's in there. And also the actor who plays the original Michael Blomkamp from the Swedish version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. That actor.
Jawbox.
Yeah, throw it in the jawbox. He's also in the film. And basically, they set out, and if you're not a NASA nerd, in recent years, NASA has discovered, they thought it was just a big ball of ice, Europa. And in actuality, now probes have seen that it's actually these humongous sort of glaciers that are actually moving, suggesting that there's probably a body of water underneath the ice. And NASA's gotten very excited about this. And then James Cameron went down to the bottom of the ocean to see if creatures could live without sunlight. And sure enough, there were creatures down around the crust of the earth living off
Once
the
again,
we
Hollywood
knew that before
the heat
James
temperature
Cameron did
but
that.
You know what I mean, he wanted to photograph it and everybody got all excited. And so this is the premise of the movie that they're going to see, and I don't want to give anything away, but it's a found footage film, so things happen to the crew. Fun watch, and done in that sort of small budget indie way the movie Moon was captured. That mm-hmm. kind of art style on film, loved it. Give that one a spin. Also, speaking of Her, where it was a crazy sort of sci-fi film.
Well, you went on a tear, huh?
Oh, yeah. This one I think you've seen as well, with Joaquin Phoenix and his OS system. Got me thinking of Robot and Frank.
Oh, yeah.
With Frank Langella mm-hmm. and basically his son. This is in the near future. His son gets him a robot to keep him company because he's an elderly man, doesn't have a wife anymore. But he was an old thief.
He was a cat burglar.
Yes.
Right.
And so he actually starts to convince the robot to help him
what a
burglarize houses.
What a twist.
Yeah.
I love it.
Twist. It's a great one. That is also streaming. All these films are streaming, so check that one out. I don't know. Also, I know Captain Phillips just came out on DVD, so give that one a spin. I know it's in Redbox.
Dude, I hope you guys had your pens furiously scribbling, because that was an amazing list.
It was.
Good movies.
Not a whole lot of geeks mentioned in that list, actually. But that is our topic this week, because James D'Amato is joining us again.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to be covering our top 5 favorite movie geeks. I can't wait to get started. James, you're getting us started. What do you got sitting at number 5?
At number 5, and I believe I will mention this film every time I'm brought back as a guest, Evie Carnahan from The Mummy.
Wow, you really like your mummy.
Who loves the mummy?
The Mummy is one of the most perfect Dungeons & Dragons movies ever. That
I would totally agree.
That group in The Mummy perfectly reflects most of the core classes for D&D. It's a great movie, and one of the best things about Evie is that she and Brandon Fraser's character are essentially split up Indiana Jones. She is the academic intelligence half of Indiana
Jones. And this character is played by Rachel Weisz, am I
yes.
right?
Okay. Yes. She is absolutely at her most beautiful in The Mummy.
Oh my gosh. Oh man, I was so disappointed that she didn't come back for that third Mummy movie. Anyway.
Come on. Who's disappointed about anything about the third Mummy movie?
Everyone.
Believe me, the second Mummy movie was better than people said it was. Anyway, this character is an adorable academic librarian who gets caught up in this archaeological treasure hunt. And Brandon Fraser, who's this thuggish barbarian type character, and her fight a mummy and fall in love. It's wonderful.
I think a lot of people probably wonderful. Have seen The Mummy. I know I own it, and
it's a great movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
You know what? It's an easy watch too. You just sort of throw it on and have fun with it. I like it. Good pick, James.
Yeah, it's a monster movie, man.
Matt, what do you got at your number five, geek?
At number five, I have Richard Wang, better known as Data from The Goonies.
Yeah!
Pinchers of power, slick shoes. I mean, the list goes on and on.
He has a pocket protector for sure.
And his pocket protector probably launches missiles. Data was the inventor. He saved the gang from many tribulations there from the Fratellis, and he was the best. I love Data. How can you not?
Data was fantastic. Of the Goonies cast, he's also the only playable character in that video game.
Goonies 2?
Goonies 2.
He's not the only playable. You start off as Mikey.
Yeah, I know. Only playable meaning he's the most powerful.
Okay.
You need those gadgets. You need those gadgets.
That is very esoteric reference there. I love it.
There are some jawheads that played that game. They know
what
I'm talking about.
I'm sure there are. Swings this over to my number five. And really, this comes from a movie that I don't think I've talked about much on the Jaw ever. The geek's name is called Quentin, played by Chris Owen, who may come up later on for playing a different geek in another movie. But it is from the movie October Sky.
Lost me.
Not one of mine.
No. Have you seen this one? This is Jake Gyllenhaal, very young Jake Gyllenhaal. I believe Laura Dern's in there as well. And Gyllenhaal plays Homer Hickam, based on a true story.
I have seen this one. Okay. I love this one.
I love this movie, okay? And he plays a young kid from Colwood, West Virginia, who's growing up and going to be a coal miner, just like his dad, just like all the town's kids. And then Sputnik goes up by the Russian satellite, and it inspires the nation. People can't believe it. And he gets involved with rockets and how do you build a rocket? And he ends up meeting this Quentin, who's sort of the geek. So he's this redheaded kid that no one hangs out with in the school, but he's the guy that knows the equations, how to do this stuff. And him and then two other friends start to become what is known as the Rocket Boys, and that's the name of the book that this is based on, which I've read as well, Rocket Boys. And they actually start building rockets, entering science fairs. And
so
does he grow up
good.
To become a rocket man?
You're damn right he does. He works for NASA as an engineer for NASA and helped put the space shuttle into orbit with his rockets.
That movie is the goddamn American dream. I love that movie.
So do I. I'm so glad you do, because I don't think I've ever talked about my passion for this movie on CinemaJaw. Chris Cooper plays his father, Jake Gyllenhaal's father.
Yeah, sure.
It also double over as a great father-son movie, because obviously he's sort of disappointed he's not going to join him in the Coles. He's into this rockets, and there's it's so great. He lets his dad launch the last rocket that they send up. Oh, it's so great.
What's the title one more time?
It's called October Sky. It came out in 1999, early Jake Gyllenhaal, before he was the big star Jake Gyllenhaal that we know. But again, the geek that I'm referencing there is Quentin, played by Chris Owen.
That is a great tip, dude.
There you go. That was my number five. We swing it into our fours. James, what do you got sitting
there? All right. Four is an oldie but a goodie classic, George McFly.
Had to be on somebody's
you
list.
You had to. Yeah, exactly. I was like, I was worried taking it. I'm like, God, how many George McFlys are going to be out there? You cannot get a better classic 1950s geek than George McFly. And he sort of embodies what the cinema geek becomes. It's an implied greatness behind the geek. They're rejected by society, and their life doesn't always work out. But George McFly, in both continuities of reality, marries the woman of his dreams, has a wonderful, loving family, and in the reality where he reaches his full potential, he writes an awesome sci-fi book. George McFly is an inspiration to every geek everywhere. Get out there and fall in love, kids.
I love it. Good one. Nice pick. Nice pick. Matt, what do you got sitting at number four?
At number four, you know, this could easily be somebody's number one. If I'm stealing it, my apologies. David Lightman from War Games.
Oh, yes.
This, I mean, Matthew Broderick at one of his very early roles, but pre-Ferris Bueller, absolutely inspired me.
Great scene in that movie is too. Is it's a very small scene, but I remember being infatuated with how cool he was. Was when he wants to make a phone call and he unscrews the bottom of the phone, yeah. Messes with some wires, and the next thing you know, he can get back on the phone. It was awesome.
Yeah, and he changes his grades. I mean, this was like,
oh man,
wow, what a cool geek.
It's part of my DNA was this character
that introduces the back door, man.
Not to
the
mention,
back door.
Yep.
Not to mention he launches full scale World War III on the United States.
Global thermonuclear. War, yeah.
Yes.
I love it. Good pick, Matt. At number four, I have another one. It's sort of an odd pick. It's not probably all that popular. The geek's name is William Lichter. He's played by Charlie Carsmo. I don't really know what else this guy is in, but the film is Can't Hardly Wait. This one stars Jennifer Love Hewitt. It all takes place in one day. It's the last day of high school. And this, it's hilarious. He plays the geek that gets into the party. He has one classic line where he goes to drink the beer. It's obviously the first time he's ever tasted beer. And he gets by the keg, and he takes a sip of it, and he just spits it out right away. And he says, "There's something wrong with the beer. Nobody drink the beer." Yeah. And they all look at him. And then, of course, he's this big dork. And then eventually he's drunk because people are getting him to drink. And Paradise City comes on, which is sort of the key moment of this movie. And he's like, "I know this song." And he gets up there and starts singing. He becomes the life of the party. Next thing you know, he hooks up with girls. He's like the geek all in one day. The geek turned cool guy that everybody loves. And, of course, the whole movie takes place in one night and one party. So he goes from geek to getting laid all in one night, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wish that would happen to me, right?
Can't Hardly Wait, a Jennifer Love Hewitt masterpiece. Woo! you don't say that often.
Yeah, you don't say that every day.
We swing it over to James. We are into our number three. What do you got sitting there?
Well, being a geek doesn't always turn out great. That's why my number three pick is Nina Sayers from Black Swan.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Rejected by society, obsessed with something that most people couldn't give a shit about. Oh, she's a geek, all right. And it kills her. And it is so beautiful. I adore Black Swan. And most of my nerdy artistic friends, we watched it together. And I'll never forget my friend Sam Kay, another guest on the One Shot podcast, was whispering next to me as we were watching the movie, the final scene. "That's right. Dance yourself to death. Dance yourself to death. You have to." And that's how I feel about all my passions. If I'm going to do it better than I've ever done it and it's going to kill me, so be it.
Wow.
Yep.
Just like maybe on this podcast, it may just happen because you want the best out of James on Cinema Jaw.
We're going to podcast ourselves to death.
Confession, I've only seen the movie once when I saw it in the theater. I own it. I bought it on Blu-ray. Just haven't opened it up. You know, I see so many movies. It takes me time sometimes to double back. So I have it sitting in my collection, dying to watch it a second time because I loved Black Swan when I saw it. It was my movie of the year, actually, that year.
Mm-hmm. I've only seen it the once, too.
Yeah. Great pick, I guess. I just didn't think of her as a geek, but good call.
Oh, she's
good
a geek.
I would agree. She's absolutely a geek.
Matt, what do you got sitting at number three?
At number three, I have another iconic movie geek, Louis Tully from the Ghostbusters. Could have really chosen any of the Ghostbusters, except for maybe Venkman.
Venkman. Yeah, Venkman's not a geek.
but I think Louis Tully is the geek among the geeks. You know, like when, especially he becomes the gatekeeper. No, he's the keymaster.
Mm-hmm.
"What did you say your name was?" "Vince Clortho, keymaster of Gozer."
"According to this, his name's Louis Tully. Lives on Central Park West. Do you want some coffee, Mr. Tully?"
"Do I?"
"Yes, have some."
"Yes, have some."
"Vince, you said before you were waiting for a sign. What sign are you waiting for?"
"Gozer the Traveler. He will come in one of the pre-chosen forms. During the rectification of the Valdrani, the Traveler came as a large and moving Torb. Then, during the third reconciliation of the last of the McKetrick supplicants, they chose a new form for him, that of a giant Slor. Many Shubs and Zools knew what it was to be roasted in the depths of the Slor that day, I can tell you."
He's just great. There's so many great lines. But when he's still human and he's having that party and he's like, "That's why I invited clients instead of friends. You having a good time, Bob?" It's like, who says stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, man. He's great. And that's obviously the actor is
Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis. I love him.
Who's in my favorite, one of my favorite movies, top three of all time, Spaceballs, Dark nice. Helmet.
Absolutely.
Yes. Nice pick there at number three. I think we're missing a classic so far on the list that has not been mentioned, and it will be here at my number three. Film came out in 1986. I mentioned it as a great football movie as well. I'm speaking of Lucas, played by Corey Haim.
Nice. Good one. Like that a lot.
You know, he's a socially awkward 14-year-old kid. He suffers heartbreak when he falls in love with Andy from the Goonies.
Yeah.
Andy, you Goonie!
That happens a lot.
I agree. Who didn't fall in love with Andy from the Goonies back in the mid-80s? You know? Me yeah. and every kid on my block. Also, Charlie Sheen's in there, Winona Ryder as well, and it has just a fabulous ending with Lucas coming down and everybody beginning to clap. I love it. It's very touching.
That was the birth of the slow clap, though.
Yep.
Was that the birth of it?
I'm going to go ahead and give it to him.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Also, I'd love to say this. It's a Corey Haim masterpiece.
Wow.
We're just breaking boundaries.
Yes. That was my number three, Lucas. We are into our twos. James, what do you got sitting there?
I have a classic geek that most teenage girls looked up to or looked at and saw themselves and felt ashamed. Enid from Ghost World.
Nice. Love this.
You cannot miss Enid, and she is that complicated teenage girl geek, doesn't quite fit in with society. Really birth of the hipster, but she was a hipster before hipsters.
So that's ultra hipster.
Yeah. The
she
coolest
was a hipster,
hipster
before they were cool.
Yeah. She had sex with Steve Buscemi, ironically. Who does that? Enid does that. And she doesn't feel great about it. And if you haven't seen Ghost World, you need to.
I agree.
Also,
adapted from a comic book.
Yep. And one of Scarlett Johansson's very early roles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe Thora Birch as well is in there. It's not our first. We've talked about
we
it.
We have
yeah,
talked about
we
that.
Have. But I, what I was going to say was I'm proud of how many times Ghost World comes up on Cinema Jaw, because being a small movie, and it comes up a lot on so many different lists. It's amazing how we've talked about Ghost World in various ways. I think it's come up quite a bit for being such a small movie. I love the pick.
Yeah, me too. Saw it in the theater. Loved it.
Nice pick. Matt, what do you got sitting at two?
Well,
no crossovers yet.
No
I love
crossovers.
It.
Amazing.
Listen, I really...
Bunch of movie geeks here.
Yeah. I debated with myself as to whether or not to put this one on the list. I really did, but I kind of have to, as being myself here. Peter Parker.
I was going to answer that for you. Once you had said that, being yourself, mm-hmm. I knew you were going there.
You know, I even have him, not on the list as one of the honorables, but I just said on the fly, you know, screw it. I'm putting him in the list. He is absolutely belongs to be on the list. Peter Parker is an outsider. He's a nerd who's bitten by a radioactive spider. And then gets
as many of us were.
Yeah.
I have to 100% agree. He's on my list as well, but I had a backup in case he was mentioned. So don't worry about it.
Oh, did I steal your number one?
No, you didn't steal my number one because he's tied with somebody else.
Okay. Nice.
But Peter Parker is the best example of a nerd. I will argue this
he's tied
to
up
anyone.
In a web with someone
he
else.
Is the greatest comic book character of all time.
I would
period.
Firmly agree with that.
He's also the...
I have no
you'd probably ground say Batman to stand on.
No, I don't know. I've never read a
he's
comic from start to finish.
He's the platonic form of a, this character could be you, for the audience to insert themselves within his role. So Peter Parker is beautiful as a nerd, as a comic book character. He absolutely deserves to be on this.
All right, since you guys both seem to know Spider-Man pretty well, I'll throw this question to you better. Who brings out sort of that geekness in the character better of the last two?
Tobey Maguire.
I would agree.
Tobey Maguire or what's his name?
James Garfield.
Andrew Garfield.
Right. Yeah.
I put my name there.
You guys both say Tobey?
Yeah,
Because the Spider-Man that they wrote for this era is not a geek. He's a hipster.
Because that's what a
geek is. Yeah, he's skateboarding around.
They went with actually a very obscure Spider-Man continuity, and that's the Spider-Man continuity from Tony Hawk Pro Skater, where you could unlock Spider-Man.
Well done. Well
oh,
done.
Oh, boy. I love it.
I was very surprised by that pick, Hollywood.
One of his special moves was doing what a spider can, where he throws the board.
But at the same point, I think, Matt, you've said that Andrew Garfield is a better Peter Parker.
He's a better actor.
He's a better actor, not a better Peter Parker.
Ah, interesting. Interesting.
I don't know. I would say he is the better Peter Parker, although I don't know if the role, it was the writing that isn't
you know what?
As good.
If maybe. They had changed it so that he had finished the web form, so he had finished his father's like formula, then I would agree. But they didn't, and he's just walking into his father's legacy, which is not Peter Parker. He earns his keep.
I agree.
Nice pick at number two. Swings us over to my number two. Can't believe this guy was not mentioned yet. He plays the character William Miller in the 2000 film Almost Famous. The actor is Patrick Fugit. You've seen Almost Famous?
Yeah, I've seen Almost Famous.
He's a geek, no doubt. He obviously is this socially awkward teen who skipped a few grades because his mother, played by Frances McDormand, skipped him along without telling him. And now he's on the road with the band Stillwater, who seems to love him. But the girls, he just seems to have a difficult time talking and relating to the girls.
Yeah, but he grows up to be... Cameron Crowe, so it's all good.
I know, but again, you would not say Cameron Crowe is a geek, right?
No, absolutely not.
Well, early on, I'm sure he was.
Yeah, no, I agree. This character was a geek. He was an outsider, but this is the story of how he finds his way in.
Yeah, but don't all geeks find their ways in?
I mean, Peter Parker did, for sure. He got bitten by a radioactive spider.
And he had two of the greatest women in history fight over him, Gwen Stacy and Mary Jane.
Don't forget Felicia Hardy.
You guys love Spider-Man.
Felicia Hardy, but she wasn't fighting. She was just winning.
True that.
Well, for me, anyways, though, Almost Famous, unbelievable film. I love it. It's one of my favorites for a long time. It's got some of the most replayable scenes in there.
Yep.
Tiny Dancer and so forth. I Am a Golden God. I love all those scenes. And I just love the movie. I love the characters in general. If you haven't seen it, Jawheads, I would think most people have. Almost Famous. Directed by Cameron Crowe. I love it.
Sits proudly in my collection.
As does mine.
All right.
We are into our ones. James, what are you going to hit us with now? I'm sure you bent the rules somehow.
Yeah, this is the ultimate geek, and I felt a little conflicted putting him on the list, but Clark Kent.
Oh, come on.
Absolutely
no
Clark
way.
Kent.
And you guys in your comics.
He is a geek, but that's a role he plays.
That's not a role he plays. You are speaking from the ill-informed and juvenile Quentin Tarantino interpretation of the character, which is wrong. Clark Kent grew up on that farm. That's who he is. He grew up afraid of his own power. The real person is Clark Kent, and the mask is Superman. Clark Kent can't talk to Lois Lane. Superman can, but that's because he's not himself. And Clark will not legitimize that relationship unless Lois Lane falls for Clark Kent instead of Superman. So, like, it's obvious. He's got the girl of his dreams. He just can't even bring himself to speak to her. And she doesn't acknowledge him. And because he's doing something more important, saving the world, he becomes even worse in her eyes.
I don't like this pick one bit. No, I gotta say, James, I'm disappointed with this number one.
I don't mind it. I don't mind it. I agree that Clark Kent is a geek, and I agree that maybe Quentin Tarantino doesn't have the final say on Superman.
No, he does not.
But Clark Kent from Smallville is not as geeky as he makes Clark Kent in
Clark
Metropolis.
Clark Kent from Smallville... is Smallville is a garbage television show.
No. I don't mean Smallville the show. I mean Smallville the fictional locale. Mm-hmm. He wasn't as insecure and, whatever.
There are a lot of different interpretations on that. I'm reading a beautiful one now from a novel called It's Superman, where Clark Kent is that person. And I like that transition a little bit better. There is the sort of not afraid of his own power, bravado Clark Kent, but I don't think that's the person that Jonathan and Martha raised. I don't see Superman... if Clark Kent grew up... not afraid of himself, he's not going to be afraid of himself when he's an adult. He needs to come from a place of, I am afraid of hurting other people and not being able to talk to people. Otherwise, the character doesn't work.
Okay. I agree.
Here's the question I have for you, since I posed this question with Spider-Man. Who's this this jackass that plays the new Superman?
I wouldn't call him a jackass, but Henry Cavill.
Okay.
Cavill.
Can you even envision him doing one-tenth the job that Christopher Reeves did?
He's
as
certainly
Clark
no
Kent.
Christopher Reeves, but I don't think that's his fault. I will say that
Kent,
is
I'm
David
not saying
Goyer's
as Superman
fault.
Because he didn't really play Clark Kent all that
Clark Kent and Superman
much
didn't appear in that
in
movie.
This movie.
They weren't right. In that movie at all. Neither one.
you're talking this latest one.
Yeah, this
latest
one.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I'm saying as they go further and we get to see him play Clark Kent, this is where I think Christopher Reeve shined. I mean, his
absolutely.
Clark Kent is it's
spot
untouchable.
On,
yes, I don't think anybody can ever touch it. That's why I always say just
actually
leave Superman
Tim
alone.
Daly is the only better one that I've seen.
I think Brandon Routh really was pretty good as Clark Kent. I thought he was great.
Absolutely. And he was a pretty good Superman, too. They had to edit his penis down, you know. They had to make
I
it smaller.
That problem all the time.
And Superman certainly would. No, I think that Henry Cavill, we will never know because he is in the worst Superman series, and that's the writer's fault and the director's
it,
fault.
It is the worst, right?
It's David Goyer.
Thank you.
David
just wanted to make sure he did say that. Could you repeat that one more time?
It is the worst Superman.
I actually missed it.
Misses the point.
I actually missed it again. Can you repeat it one more time?
Man of Steel misses the point of Superman more than any movie that will ever miss the point.
Thank you. Thank
did
you
think that it was good?
Yes.
He loved it. Matt!
We made
his top 10 list of the year.
What? We have fundamentally different opinions
Jawheads,
of
James
Superman.
James is on the floor. Wait, let's get him up. Get him up, guys. Elias, can you help James up?
This is the geek episode, so I don't feel bad about
all right,
going
he's
off
back
on
up
this.
Let's get into this.
Here we go. We have a fundamentally different view on Superman.
Yeah, I'm right and you're wrong.
No, I think that Superman is he was influenced by Ma and Pa Kent, and that's what kept him from going completely insane. But at his core, this person... Superman is a freaking alien. He's not human.
Superman
James.
Was a story created by Jewish immigrants.
Right.
One of the things that they experienced growing up, in addition to being orphaned because of prejudice, was feeling like outsiders.
Right. Absolutely.
So this character was created by people who knew what it was like to be an outsider and wanted to believe more than anything that they could belong. So you are telling me that their interpretation ultimately is that Superman can never be one of us. I say to you, read it again.
He's
James.
All right.
James.
I hate it when I get ganged up on the Superman thing.
Oh, I love it. Hey,
I'm sorry. You're wrong. I wrote three long essays about
it. That doesn't
make
you
right. And you can read them.
I'll read them.
Read them,
you know,
and I'm right.
I'll read them.
Jawhead's complaint letters go to Matt Kabinsky and also to James. I didn't have any argument on this one, so don't aim them towards me this time. Great pick at number one.
Number
Matt,
one.
What do you got sitting there?
Well, it's no Clark Kent. It's actually going to be somewhat anticlimactic after all that.
Should have.
I really
James
was hoping this one was kind of an ace in the hole here. I'm a huge fan of this movie. I've watched it three or four times, and I think it deserves rewatching. It is Max Cohen from the film Pi, Darren
Ooh.
Aronofsky's cinematic debut.
Good
nice
pick. Good pick.
He literally is driven to self-mutilation by his genius/madness. He basically finds a number that contains the code name for God. It's this.
It's Lovecraftian horror. It's really well done, Lovecraftian horror.
Yeah, people are coming at him from all angles. The people in the stock market want it. The CIA wants it. And there's this secret Jewish underground that's interpreting the Torah through numerology. They want
it's
it.
Crazy.
He's got a friend who's a mathematician that he goes and plays Go with all the time. And he's went almost insane from trying to find this number. He's got a supercomputer at home. He's a nerd.
Yes.
He's a geek.
And you know what? I love this film as well, Matt. And a great pick. I listened to the director's commentary by Darren Aronofsky. This was obviously his first feature film, and he tells this hilarious story about them shooting in the subway, and they didn't have the permits to do all this crazy stuff that they were about to do, but he said, you know what, let's do it, let's go for it. And the police came down, and while they were shooting, and he thought, oh my God, we're totally busted. But it ends up that Woody Allen, who frequently shoots in New York as well, was shooting right above them on the streets, and they thought it was all part of the same production. So they
nice.
Just let the whole thing run.
No
it's a great
way.
Story. Yeah.
I was going to say, isn't there a weapon or something in that scene?
Little gems you can find out from the director's commentary. I love that film. Great pick. At number one, I mean, this guy, when he busted out on the scene, one of the best characters in teen comedies to come along in a long time. I'm speaking of Fogel, or better known as McLovin from Superbad.
It's worthy.
Thank you.
McLovin.
Yes. I mean, obviously, the actor's name is Christopher Mintz. place, I guess is how he says it.
His name's McLovin.
Yeah, McLovin. That's how we, as soon as he comes on screen.
We gotta get his name right, because he's really trying to get away from that role.
No, he's not. He wears an I'm McLovin t-shirt.
There's no chance. His voice alone in the film is so worthy of geek knighthood, you know what I mean? And he tells the terrible jokes. At one point, they're like, yeah, how does it go with the ladies, McLovin? And he's like, with the ladies, it's not the going I care about. It's the coming. oh my God, I love this guy. He also plays Augie in Role Models. Have you seen this film where he's into like a reenactment LARPing of medieval times?
Yeah.
James, I could see you doing this on the weekends because you love your
James
Dungeons
has
and
LARPed
Dragons.
Once or twice, haven't you?
I actually.
And it's a hilarious movie, Role Models.
I've done it once.
There you go. There you go. And one other honorable mention, cannot believe it's appalling that this man was not mentioned in one of his movies playing a geek. Anthony Michael Hall. Come on, guys. Yeah. Jeez.
He's played everyone from Bill Gates to the geek in Breakfast Club and.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I didn't put it on my list because I thought it would be mentioned.
Somebody else would do it. Yeah.
Same here.
Well, somebody's going to have Anthony Michael Hall in one of his movies. So.
Yeah. Weird Science, another great role for
him. Weird Science. For me not to put that one on there.
I love that movie.
Great one. So, Jawheads, what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. When we come back, we have a cinema war looking at what was the biggest Oscar snub of the season. Plus, in honor of the new Zac Efron movie, That Awkward Moment, James will be taking Matt on in successful child actor movie trivia. We'll be right back on Cinema Jaw. Hey, Jawheads. Exciting news. C2E2, Chicago's Comic and Entertainment Expo, is coming back to Chicago April 25th through the 27th. There's always big-name guests there from the world of entertainment and comics. Plus, the best thing, Matt, we're going to be there. We have our own booth, Cinema Jaw. So stop by, say hello.
We'll be there.
Meet Elias. See what the jaw box is all about. See how small it really is.
You can even smell it if you dare.
It is taking place at McCormick Place. To find out more information on C2E2, visit their website, c2e2.com. Tickets are on sale now. Enjoy.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a Cinema Jaw movie fact. Director John Hughes went on record and said all of the characters played by Anthony Michael Hall in his films are actually based on Hughes himself. And that is your Cinema Jaw movie fact.
Go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on Cinema Jaw, hanging out with James D'Amato from One Shot Podcast, dealing with role-playing games that Matt is featured on currently on a Star Wars one. Am I correct here, James?
Yes, yes. We are in the middle of a grand Star Wars sextuplegy. It's going to feature Matt for every episode. You'll get to see him playing a brave droid named R2-D20, which is so on the nose it hurts. Say it aloud. You'll feel physical pain.
Check out that podcast.
It's great. It's a great name.
Peachesandhotsauce.com.
Peachesandhotsauce.com. And you can also check out my other podcast there, The Overshare, which is an improv podcast where we tell deeply personal stories.
I should start listening to that, James.
Everyone should
learn a little bit more about you.
Matt, before we open up the Jaw box, I wanted to remind the Jawheads our first selection of the Jaw Movie Club is Silent Running. It's a 1972 film that will answer the question, what the hell else has Bruce Dern ever done?
Besides The Burbs.
Oh, so good.
Oh, I love The Burbs, and I love Bruce Dern and The Burbs. But yeah, Silent Running, so check it out. It is streaming on Netflix and Redbox Instant. Matt, we know Elias is probably suffocating down in the jaw box. It's been a week since we've opened that thing, and it's a cold winter in here in Chicago, so let's open up that jaw box.
I forgot to turn on the heat.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box! No, what's in the box?
What's going on, guys? Ryan, I'm glad you guys picked that movie as the movie club, The Silent Running, because I've tried to master that to get out of here, but the shackles, that it's just way too loud. Matt wakes up and...
Not to mention the cowbell collar. That's...
Yeah. Well, I try to, sit perfectly still so it doesn't get...
I'm surprised with how emaciated you are that you can't just slip out of the shackles at this point, actually. We talked about atrocities on the act of killing, but really, if you care about human rights at all, you will stop these men from keeping this man in the jaw box.
James, I don't want any of your improv skills coming my way. I prepare my bits and...
all right, fine. You can rot in the jaw box.
Thank you. All right, here we go, guys. Oh, real quick. Devin Sawa starred in such movies as Final Destination,
ooh,
Idle Hands, Casper, and Little Giants starring Rick Moranis, Matt.
I've seen all of those movies.
It all comes full circle.
All right, so he's a somebody. Anyway, here we go. Efron, the P movie with Nicole Kidman, is the Paperboy.
Ah, yes, the Paperboy. Not all that bad.
The Paperboy.
Yes. He doesn't play. I mean, he's a reporter. But it's actually not that bad of a film. And it also sees Nicole Kidman and John Cusack have...
had me at Nicole Kidman.
Orgasms. They each have orgasms sitting next to each other while in prison. You guys got to see this movie.
So weird.
This keeps getting better and better.
Wow. Okay, and the girl with the dragon tattoo, Swedish version, the actor's name is Michael Nyquist.
Nyquist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nyquil. Michael Nyquil.
Was that all we threw in the jaw box?
Yeah, that's about it.
All right, get back in there.
All right.
And Matt, turn on the heat.
All right.
Matt, it brings us to a segment called...
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week. And our guest this week, James D'Amato, gets to play judge, jury, and executioner and tell the Jawheads who he thinks won this Cinema War. It's important because me and Matt are battling for 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. Oscar nominations came out. There were a couple of big snubs in the Best Picture category. Heck, Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic, what was the biggest Oscar snub of the year? Inside Llewyn Davis missing out on Best Picture, or Before Midnight missing out on Best Picture? Matt, you'll be fighting for Inside Llewyn Davis. Rye, you'll be fighting Before Midnight. Let the Cinema War begin.
Ryan, everyone thought that Llewyn Davis was a shoe-in for Best Picture, including you. The Before series is highly beloved, but Best Picture material, come on.
Get a load of this one, and I can win it on this fact alone. The critical website Rotten Tomatoes has Before Midnight at a whopping 98% fresh from critics. I did my research. That is better than all 9 Best Picture nominees, and even slightly better than critical darling Inside Llewyn Davis.
Never tell me the odds. Here's the thing. I think that any of the Before films would be deserving of Best Director, or when it's all said and done, even a Lifetime Achievement Award. But to say that a sequel is more deserving of an original masterpiece from the Coen brothers is dead wrong. This is no Godfather 2.
Here's the thing. Jesse and Celine, two characters created by Ethan Hawke, Julie Delpy, and Richard Linklater, have been with us for 18 years, and each time they grow deeper, richer, and more interesting. A nomination was deserved to show this epic series some love.
I agree, just not Best Picture. Llewyn Davis has the better Hollywood pedigree and is the way bigger snub. Coen brothers, John Goodman, Carey Mulligan, Oscar Isaac, Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy are great and all, but I just don't see how you hold a candle to that list.
Well, here's the thing, Matt. I love Inside Llewyn Davis, so it's tough for me to argue against it, but it is not the best from the Coen brothers, and actually probably not in their top three even. However, of the three movies in the Before series, this is the best. It deals with real issues that couples have and fight through. There is very little to no Hollywood moments. It is raw and it is real and it deserved a nomination, damn it.
All right, you want some stats? Ethan and Joel Coen have each been nominated for 13 Academy Awards and have won 4. Linklater has been nominated just once, if I'm not mistaken. I just don't think he's on the same plane as the Coens.
Well, I mean, let me tell you this. The reason Before Midnight is the biggest snub to me, Matt, is that all year long, since it screened at Sundance in January last year, critics and audience have just been in love with this movie. It topped many best of lists. It was adored by audiences who saw it. A nomination seemed like a sure thing. Instead, it was the biggest snub of the year, hands down. Wow.
Yeah.
We go to blows. Man. I mean, we got arguments on both sides. They're great films. I think we all
it's
can agree
one.
On that.
This
it's
is
a
real
tough one.
This is a real horse race.
In fact, this may be one of the most difficult Cinema Wars to judge. We throw it to a great judge, James D'Amato. What'd you think of this Cinema War?
I think you both made very, very good points. And it's really hard to argue against either movie because they, let's be honest, they both deserve to be there. But you know what? I got to give it to Ryan.
Nice.
Oh, man. Nice. Why?
I you know what? I
it was my Superman thing.
No, it wasn't the Superman thing, although your taste is questionable this point.
Yeah.
I'll say this. I dislike the fact that we see the same names go into the Oscars over and over again. And I'll agree with Ryan. It's not the Coen brothers' best film. And just because the Coen brothers are behind it, I don't think that lends it any more credence. If you're good and you want to win an Oscar again, you have to beat yourself. And they didn't beat themselves. This is an achievement.
Thank you. Thank you.
I beat myself every day.
Oh boy, good times. Good times here on Cinema Jaw.
I'll give that a ding. Thanks. I don't have the sound effects box, but it deserves a ding.
I tell you what though, what's really a slap in the face to one of these two films is the Academy has the ability to nominate 10 films each year.
10 films and they not left one
it,
of them.
And they left it at 9. So that's why it's the
really?
Biggest. Yeah, there's only 9 nominated films, so there was one
that
slot
is a
left.
Full
and not
on
to not
snub.
Nominate one of these two. That's I want somebody to come out and give me an explanation. It's ridiculous. Thank you, though, James. That earns me 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave on whatever I want. And I want to rant on, I just finished the book Unbroken, written by Laura Hillenbrand, who wrote Seabiscuit. And what a fabulous book. And it's come to my attention that they are currently filming this movie. It has a release date of December of this year. Prime Oscar bait, and it is being directed by the one and only Angelina Jolie. Angelina, I know you listen to Cinema Jaw Weekly. Do not fuck this thing up. This is a great book. I had tears in my eyes at the end of it. It deserves, in my opinion, a better director. Now that I know that she has it, I'm already worried about this film. So please, Angelina, give it your absolute A game.
Has she directed anything else?
She has. She directed In the Land of Blood and Honey, which was a foreign film. That
which I believe you liked.
I did. I mean, it was okay. Well, you know what it was? It dealt with the Bosnian conflict. Mm-hmm. And it on the DVD actually had an extra with all the actors who ended up, you found out, that I didn't know going into it, actually lived through the Bosnian conflict and were on different sides.
That's almost cheating.
And so at the end of it, actually watching the documentary of how they made the film and listening to the actors' take on the conflict was more compelling than the movie itself. But I'd recommend renting the film no matter what.
Wow.
There you go.
Maybe she'll do a good job.
I hope so. I mean, this is an epic film. I've never read a survival story like this. It's a World War II survival film. If you guys like it, Jawheads, it's called Unbroken. I know it's been New York Times bestseller for a long time. It's a
Plus,
great book.
She's got Brad Pitt's production company behind her, I'm guessing. Is it Plan 9?
I would imagine.
So they've got some resources.
Yeah, I'm interested. Like, I haven't seen her movie, and if it was good, I don't think there's any reason to assume that it's going to be bad, but I can see wanting something that you care about to be in the hands of somebody talented instead of Zack Snyder.
Yeah, you know, when I read the book, you know, when it finished, it was like, you know what?
I heard that, James.
Yeah, you were meant to.
You know what? When I finished Unbroken, it was like, you know what? Spielberg's going to make one hell of a good movie. Otherwise.
Oh!
That's what I thought. You know, I thought this is going to be a movie that's just. I mean, this is. You read it and it's like, well, this has got best picture written all over it. They make a movie out of
he
this.
Made Seabiscuit,
and
right?
I look it up. No, he didn't.
Oh,
I look it up, and next thing I know, it's Angelina Jolie.
Yeah,
so.
But don't you think like he's done with World War II? I can't imagine him doing another
World War II. I agree. All right. So we got to play trivia here, and because Zac Efron is in that awkward moment, we are playing successful child actor movie trivia. It works like this. James, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals if the person doesn't know it, and if you get hung up on one, our engineer, the best in the biz, Elias Rodriguez, has clues to all the questions. You get one trip to the ER.
Can I ask a quick question? How do you define successful child actor?
Well, you'll see by the questions.
Okay.
Jason Bateman.
That would be... I'll go for
the first one.
All right. Question number one. Right. Pretty easy. They're always layups to begin with, so here we go.
That's why I took it.
Yeah. Here we go, James. This child actor has had a successful career and even won an Oscar for Best Actress in the movie Black Swan.
Oh, okay. Natalie Portman? I guess she is a child actor.
Yes.
She's a beautiful girl. She was only like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And Neon, the professional.
The professional.
Oh, yeah, the professional.
Oh,
absolutely.
Great.
There you go.
Oh, man.
Question number two. This actor has been on the scene since the early 80s in TV series such as Valerie. Lately, he's been seen in Horrible Bosses and Identity Thief.
I'm going to go ahead and say Jason Bateman.
There we go.
One to one. That's hilarious that you would bring it up, and it's right away. All right, let's get serious here.
Thanks, James.
Yeah.
Hey, no problem.
Question number three. Joseph Gordon-Levitt recently starred in Don John opposite this actress.
Nope, didn't see Don John, so I'm going to go, you know, I'll go to the ER and see if I can guess it.
Wow. Question number three. He goes to the ER.
I didn't do very well last time. I want to get 2 points.
Elias Rodriguez, who starred opposite Joseph Gordon-Levitt in Don John?
Your clue is the OS in Her.
Scarlett Johansson.
That was a good hint.
That was a great hint.
Wow. Can you thank Elias?
I thank you so much, Elias. You deserve so much better.
Well done. Well done. It is 2-1, James. Question number four is over to Matt. Ron Howard, who obviously is a child actor, his career spans 50 years. Mm-hmm. His latest directed film was about Formula One racing and came out just last year. What was the name of it?
Rush. Not to be confused with the Joseph Gordon-Levitt film Premium Rush.
2-2 And I just wonder, what was the clue for that question, Elias?
Let's see. A modern-day warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride. Okay. I was just reading it as I love it.
Was that movie based on the video game Rush? Rush 64 was a hell of a game.
No, but I've seen Rush. It's actually really, really well done. Okay, back to the game. 2-2. Question number five over to James. In 2005, Drew Barrymore starred with Jimmy Fallon in this film about love and the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, man. You know, I've seen this film, but because I'm a Yankees fan, I don't think my brain will let me remember it.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
So I'm going to have to go with Constantine.
I love how James takes these guesses. They're great.
Damn it.
You got a chance for a steal here, Matt. Drew Barrymore, Jimmy Fallon. It was a baseball movie.
Yeah, I remember. It was based on an SNL skit. God damn.
Yeah, see, yeah, that's exactly how I feel about that movie.
Yeah, it was a piece of crap. And then they gave Fallon a talk show for some reason.
Ugh.
Sister Act 2? I'm taking a page
close.
Out of
That was close, though. That was really close.
We were looking for Fever Pitch.
Fever Pitch. Yeah. There was no way I would remember
Epic
that.
Ending with them running on the field. Who could forget it?
That Except movie is the reason they won the World Series that year.
All right. Question number six is over to Matt Kay. It is tied 2-2. Matt, at the age of 11, this childhood star became the second youngest actress in history to win an Oscar for her role in The Piano. She can be seen lately in 2011's Margaret. You do have a lifeline if you need it.
Yeah, fine. Let's go to the ER.
Whoa! Question number six over to Elias. What was the name of the actress who won an Oscar for The Piano?
Your clue is it's not Penguin.
It's not Penguin.
Leopard seal.
There's a lot of things that are not Penguin. I mean, is it? I mean, the first thing that pops into my mind is Catwoman.
Well, yeah. I mean,
it's Catwoman. That was a great
movie. We're
looking
for an actress, not Penguin. Boy, oh boy. It's supposed to be a hint. I think it's knocking you over the head if you think about it.
It's very cryptic. Not Penguin. Jesus Christ, I have no idea. Cate Blanchett. Keira Knightley.
Wow, James, you got a chance for a steal here.
Okay.
She won the Oscar for The Piano at age 11.
It's got to be Keanu Reeves. Unbelievable.
We were looking for Anna Paquin.
Oh!
Come on, guys.
Jesus, that was actually a great hint.
I know. I know.
Could you throw me a rogue hint, you know, like she was in X-Men?
My goodness.
I would have gotten that.
It is now 3-2 still, Matt. And question number 7, you can tie it up here, James.
All right.
Is over to you. Christian Bale was a kid when he starred in Empire of the Sun, and he reportedly lost 62 pounds to play a man with insomnia in this 2004 psychological thriller.
Yep. Yep. Another movie that I will not remember the name of. So, oh God, I'm going to have to go with 47 Ronin. Come on!
So
he looks like Keanu Reeves.
So close. So, Matt, it is 3-2. You can blow this thing wide open here. Movie
go
in which
it,
Christian Bale lost 62 pounds to play came out in...
And this is right before Batman, too.
2004. Yeah. It's a psychological thriller.
I really wanted to make a silly guess a la James's style here, but it was The Machinist. I was going to say Back
yeah.
to the Future.
Yeah, it was good, too. Oh, man.
Sure was. Matt has won this one at this point. It is 4-2. The last question of the game is over to Matt. This actress was 11 when she was in The Addams Family. Later, she went on to star in Monster and Speed Racer. What's her name?
Christina Ricci.
The Addams Family, really underrated.
Oh, I agree.
Those movies were awesome.
Yeah. I like it when the Girl Scout cookie scene, like, are they made from real Girl Scouts?
That's, oh, my God. There are so many great scenes.
Matt, you win this one walking away 5-2.
Hey.
Well done, sir.
Congratulations.
Well done. In case it came down to a tie, there was a jawbreaker. We would have threw this question over to you, mm-hmm. James. Better overall career from child actor to nowadays, Jodie Foster or Ron Howard?
Ron Howard. Arrested Development, man. You Ooh. Cannot top Arrested Development.
I do love that that's call right true. There. Yeah, that is true. Nice. But we got two Oscars in the pocket for Jodie Foster.
That's fine. It's an Oscar. It means absolutely nothing.
That's true.
Well,
except that there's a little bit less gold in the world for us to make computers.
Just like
with.
That jawbreaker, it meant absolutely nothing because it's just a jump. The real jawbreaker was this. Age of Jason Bateman closest to, James, do you got a guess?
Ooh, I like this question a lot. 46.
We throw James in at 46. Can you lock him in, Elias? Matt, what do you got?
I think he's a little older. I think he might be pushing 50. We'll go 48.
Give that one to James. 45. 45.
On the nose, huh?
Oh, wow.
Well done.
Oh, very
well
close.
Wow, oh, he's... very young still.
He started young. Let's not forget Teen Wolf 2.
Who? The, God, no one should forget it. No one should forget it.
Oh, good stuff. As always, James, second appearance on Cinema Jaw. Can't thank you enough for coming on.
I can't thank you guys enough for having me back. It's always fun to get completely trounced in trivia.
You're one of the few people I seem to be able to beat.
So definitely, Jawheads, check out James's podcast. Matt is featured on the episode right now. It's part one of a part threer. Check it out at peachesandhotsauce.com.
Mm-hmm. It's one shot at peachesandhotsauce.com and the overshare at peachesandhotsauce.com. Listen to them both. Throw us some stars on iTunes while you're giving high ratings to Cinema Jaw.
Yeah. Matt, you're going to be there anyway.
Yeah, exactly,
well.
Right?
We also got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to Redbox Instant.
And also the New 400.
Yeah, the New 400 is one of the best movie theaters in Chicago. They have a full-service bar, some of the best prices on first-run movies. You can check out what's playing at thenew400.com.
And Matt, we also got to thank the best in the biz, Elias Rodriguez. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you very much.
That's it for Elias.
And don't forget about C2E2.
Yes, and also a reminder, the Movie Club selection, Silent Running. Check it out, Jawheads. Send us your tweets, your thoughts on it. Till next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.